The recording has begun again. We are back at 10:44. We'll do a roll call. Dr. King?
Here.
Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Dr. Cornwall?
Here.
Mr. Greer? Mr. Barton?
Here.
Mr. Greer is still absent for staff. Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
We are all, and Mr. Harris is here. We are all here. Dr. King?
Thank you. So I wanted to make a motion for a board order that includes 6 CEUs of documentation, 3 CEUs of ethics, retaking the jurisprudence exam. I suggested 12 months probation with monitoring by an external monitor. I'm going to start the motion with 10 patients, home health patients preferably, per month. To assess his documentation and his practice. That's it.
I'll second.
Discussion.
I'm assuming that, you know, if early termination is possible.
Yes.
Right. Those would be minimum, right? Because let's say he does 10 and things are not looking as great, we could ask for more, correct?
I don't know if we can ask for more. I know we can reduce as progress is documented. I don't know if we can increase. So, Mindy, would you know that?
You can ask. If he doesn't succeed, then he has a subsequent, he's required to do a subsequent passing review.
Kind of like chart reviews. So if you do 3 chart reviews and they're not right up to par, then you ask for another 3. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like chart reviews as well as practice assessment.
And we have done, you know, historically, when we do external monitoring, it may start with monthly and then you may move to quarterly over time.
And so is that something that I need to make sure that I stipulate in the motion that it could move to quarterly depending on progress over the 12 months of probation? And then at what point, if we're talking about early termination of probation, at what point would we say that he's met that if we're reducing it over the probationary period?
3 consecutive passing reports.
Thank you. Okay. Amended. Is there any further discussion or questions?
Dr. King, members of the board, did you initially want the practice monitor to do a kind of like an audit of the practice in order to determine that the workload is appropriate?
Yeah, I believe that was supposed to be part of it.
Yes. Yep.
I believe.
And do we need to define appropriate by 6 home visits? Yeah. No more than 6 home visits a day?
Not to exceed, yes.
That's what I was going to ask as far as like what would be considered appropriate, because it sounds like 6 was the standard for select, but I don't know if that's the industry standard for home health. I've not worked in home health very much, so.
It probably also changes. 6 would seem a lot if you're traveling around to different homes. It may be a really low number if you've got 4 patients in the same group home. So.
You know, like I've heard 8 as a standard for some people. So I don't know if we need to make it more of a like 6 to 8 patients or 5 to 7 patients or to kind of, you know, take that kind of stuff into account too.
I know Mr. Mendez is wanting to address us. I'm wondering if maybe we can say, can we leave that to the practice manager?
Okay. I think we can. I think we can word the directions for the practice monitor to, you know, if there is concerns related to his load level, to record that in his monthly reports, so that that information can be presented to you for your review and, if necessary, further action. But to address the load level in their report.
Mm-hmm.
If I may make one clarifying, I guess, question or comment for the board, Ms. King, I'll stop there. I think it's important to understand what the definition of visit is, if this is the course that the board goes, because as we spoke about before, there are instances when an individual may not necessarily require a full amount of time or full treatment. And so I think there's concern from the load, I guess, management perspective, that there may be instances where you see 6 patients and it was a total of 3 hours. And so therefore now my client is done for the day. I think it's important to perhaps clarify what visit may mean if this is a parameter that you're going to put on any consent.
Thank you.
Yeah. So my inclination would be maybe we leave that up to the monitor.
Agreed.
And just because, especially since, given the testimony, I don't know that we know where he's, what he's working in now. Maybe we just leave that up to the monitor and say, monitor the workload and note it.
Right.
Yeah. Because the record should reflect, you know, and support the number of patients he sees every day.
Okay, is there a second? Did we have a second?
Second.
I believe Josh seconded.
So I seconded the original, but given the changes we've made, do we have to re-second? If so, I'll re-second it.
No, I just needed to amend to include monitoring the load, the productivity or visit load to a reasonable amount that would not exceed appropriate level.
Okay. I would second that amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right, then we should probably call the vote.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to issue a board order to include 12 months probation with early termination possible after meeting a minimum of 3 consecutive successful monitoring reports. CE to be approved by staff may be completed online and not count towards CE for renewal, but will consist of the following: 6 hours of documentation and 3 hours of ethics, successful passage of the AZ Law jurisprudence exam, and practice monitoring to include a minimum of 10 home health patients per month to assess documentation and practice, which may be adjusted over time as necessary, and monitoring should reflect and support the load level to determine that the workload is acceptable. Do we have a duration of this monitoring?
I believe the discussion was 3 consecutive months.
Yeah, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the period of probation was for 12 months, that if he successfully receives three consecutive months where, you know, the records have been determined to meet the minimum standards and he's practicing in accordance with all other state, you know, rules and laws, that he would be able to ask for early release.
Okay.
Was that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's read that again. It's been moved and seconded to issue a board order that includes 12-month probation with early termination possible. CE to be approved by staff may be completed online and not count towards renewal, consisting of 6 hours of documentation and 3 hours of ethics, successful passage of the AZ Law Jurisprudence Exam, and practice monitoring to include a minimum of 10 home health patients per month to assess documentation and practice, which may be adjusted over time. And the monitoring should reflect and support the load level in the reports, with with three successful consecutive monitoring reports, early termination of the probation may be considered.
And Dr. King, members of the board, I apologize, just a couple of clarifying questions. If you were to ask for early release, that would include having successfully completed the CE requirements. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. All other requirements plus 3 months of clean monitoring.
And then with respect to the CE, would he be able to submit for approval and any courses that he previously took since the complaint has been filed in satisfaction of these requirements?
I'm not sure that any that he took actually would meet the requirements from a CE perspective. They might partially meet, but neither of them fully met the CE requirements.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are we clear enough to vote, or should we do that? Okay. Okay, Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Castillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Ladisour. The board staff will be in touch with you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, thank you. Okay. Judy, do you want to stop recording and start again? And then
we just did it with the break.
Okay.
We can do it again.
Yep, perfect.
Or we can do it after this one.
Okay, so questions. For you, Judy. I know we had a 10:30 presentation. Is that correct? 10:30?
Yep.
But we also have a another informal hearing that had a schedule as well.
Mm-hmm. The informal hearing has to be heard.
Perfect. Okay. All right. So then we will move on to case number 2134, Makita Gilbert, PT. Is Dr. Gilbert on the call?
Hi, good morning. Yes, I'm here.
Good morning. And are you represented by anyone, Dr. Gilbert?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. All right. Judy, do you need to do roll call again?
I believe we'll start. Do we need to start with your script again? Is that a per hearing?
It is for sure. But I have roll call on before the script, so I don't know if.
Okay. If you we can do a quick roll call. Not a problem.
Okay. Thanks.
Dr. King.
Present.
Dr. Basile.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Dr. Cornwall.
Here.
Mr. Greer? Mr. Barton?
Here.
Okay, we're all here.
Okay. All right, so Ms. Gilbert, I just have a script that I need to read just to kind of level set the expectations around an informal hearing, and then we'll move into testimony. So this interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any board statutes or rule has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions: issue a decree of censure, place restrictions on a licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If the board finds the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of the license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. So at this time, Dr. Gilbert, I'd like to swear you in. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
And Mindy Richardson?
Mindy Richardson, yes, I do. And I do notice that the complainant, Joshua Ray, is also on the call. You may want to swear him in as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Ray, I'd like to swear you in as well. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. All right. So, Ms. Richardson, do you want to give us a quick summary of?
Yes. Board opened complaint 2134 after review of complaint from a patient's father, Mr. Joshua Ray. Mr. Ray alleged that Ms. Gilbert was abusive and engaged in substandard care when she improperly managed his son, JW, during his drop seizure. In his statement, he states that Ms. Gilbert forcibly held JW's head after Mr. Ray asked her to stop multiple times. The board determined in your initial review the following potential violations: ARS 32-2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established; and ARS 32-2044-12, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession. Principle 1, a physical therapist shall respect the rights and dignity of all individuals and shall provide compassionate care. The key issue in this matter is, was Ms. Gilbert's level of experience and clinical preparation for the first visit with JW, a vulnerable pediatric patient with significant medical history? This case is for your review.
Thank you. Dr. Gilbert, would you like to make an opening statement? And I do want to make sure to remind you, as well as Mr. Ray, to please refer to the patient by initials only.
Hi, no, I don't have any opening statements at this time.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Ray, would you like to make an opening statement?
No, we don't need to.
Is it just me? I'm having a really hard time. Hearing him.
No. Sorry, I got my daughter in the background. I'm moving away.
It's okay. I hear an echo. I hear myself, but I can't hear you.
Can you hear me better now?
Kind of. But I hear myself better.
Do you guys happen to have the meeting open on two different sources?
No, I just have my phone. That's it.
I'm not sure why that could be.
No. Do you have it on a laptop or a speakerphone?
I could get it on the, just right now, it's just on.
We'll see if this is better.
Okay, thank you.
Is that better?
You're very faint.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
No more echo, though.
Yes, so the echo's gone. We'll try to listen intently, try to maybe speak as loudly as you can. That would be helpful.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try. I'll just try to talk loudly when it's when you need me to. Is that better?
Oh yeah.
Okay. That is cool.
Okay. Would you like to make an opening statement, Mr. Ray?
No, we do not need to.
Okay. Thank you. And I'm assuming that both Dr. Gilbert and Mr. Ray, you're okay with answering questions from the board?
I am, yes.
Yes.
Makita, okay. All right, so we'll start with any questions for Makita Gilbert, PT, by the board members.
Dr. King,
yes.
Members of the board, I'm sorry. Sorry. You may want to hear an overview from Ms. Richardson, and at some point before taking testimony, if we could just swear the two witnesses in.
I think we already swore them.
I think I already did that. Nindy, did you give us a summary? You did, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I swore them.
I apologize. I'm not sure where I was the last 5 minutes.
It's okay. Totally get it. I think we're good to go, though, Mr. Harris. I think everyone's been sworn in. We have a summary, and we're at the point of starting to ask the licensee some questions. So I'll go first, if that's okay with everyone. So do you prefer Dr. Gilbert, Ms. Gilbert, Makita? How do you prefer to be
reached? Anyone is fine.
So, Makita, question. And looking at your response and the interview, can you just let us know what your experience was prior to working with patient JW as far as working with pediatric patients?
I work mostly with pediatrics in an outpatient setting. I did some home care, but not home care, just designated just for pediatric children, pediatric cases. Prior to working for CJPS, I worked in an outpatient facility, and I've treated various ages from 18 months to the youngest I think I had was maybe 12 prior to starting CJPS. The 18-month-old that I had, she was walking in 2 months. I've had a fair amount of experience with kids. I wasn't just like going into home care with no experience at all.
So thinking about your prior time in outpatient and before working with patient JW, how many pediatric patients had you worked with?
In Arizona, remember off the top. I can't remember an exact number, but at the company prior to CJPS, I would say at least more than 10, maybe 5 to 10. If I think about it, I can't recall exactly. I've worked with pediatrics cases in when I worked in New York as well, all in an outpatient setting with more so developmental delays.
Okay.
And yeah. That was pretty.
And have you taken continuing education courses, regarding working with patients that are
pediatric? I did not an extensive course. I did some internal with the company, like reviews on MedBridge, things like that, but not a physical course just on pediatric cases.
Okay. Okay. So question. Thinking back to your first visit, your only visit, but going into your visit with patient JW, what was your understanding of the evaluation plan of care goals for that patient? Had you reviewed the evaluation, or was it actually scheduled as an evaluation session?
It was scheduled kind of as a reevaluation kind of session. It was requested of me to really go in because of the situation. I guess the Rays had not had a PT in there for a while. I did review his ISP prior to going into the visit. But that's pretty much all I reviewed prior to the visit and the treatment on the day that I saw JW.
So did you have assessments in mind? Were you planning to actually do a full reevaluation?
Yes, I kind of plan to do a full reevaluation, and most of the families that I see, I read the ISP, and sometimes, you know, you go into the home and there's more involved in some cases sometimes as a clinician than what's on the ISP. So I kind of base my, okay, how the direction is going to go after kind of talking with the families and getting an assessment from them. In addition to the ISP, okay, how are we going to develop goals together? What kind of goals do they want to achieve? Which I did discuss with the race at the visit prior to treating.
Okay. And how much experience prior to your time with patient JW had you had with patients with seizures?
I will say it has been a while since I've had a patient with a seizure, but I've had experience with patients with seizures in inpatient settings, subacute settings. I've had one in New York before, but none specifically in the time frame or recent, in the recent time of the events with JW. But I do have experience and I've seen seizures. It's not like I've never seen a seizure before.
Right. And had you had experience with drop seizures specifically?
Drop seizures, I hadn't experienced one in person in front of me before. I've seen a tonic-clonic one, but I hadn't, that was like my first time seeing in that moment with JW a drop seizure.
Okay, thank you.
But I did have knowledge of what drop seizures were, just to be clear.
So I have a question for you. So in reading the testimony for yours, as well as some of the documentation, if I remember correctly, JW was 4 years old at the time. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm no longer with the company, so I don't have any of his records.
Okay. Yes. And then I think
he was 4 years old.
The medical history. Thank you. The medical history stated that he sometimes was having 20 plus seizures a day. Does that sound familiar?
Is that according to dad?
That was according to the dad and to the history in the IFP.
Yes.
Okay. So my question, I think, is going to be, can you walk me through your thought process? And you're holding patient JW and he starts to have a seizure. Dad's familiar, of course, with what happens with this patient. He's having 20 plus seizures a day. I'm having a hard time understanding why you felt the need to direct dad's reactions, and
yeah, no, I don't follow his instructions. I don't think I directed his reactions. And I wasn't really holding JW when the initial, I guess, whatever dad saw. JW was kind of sitting in a sitting position and he was facing dad that was sitting on the couch. So dad's face changed because I'm kind of talking to him as well as dangling like some toys in front of JW. Dad, and watching his expression, it looked like concern. So I was like, what's going on? He's like, oh, I think he's going to have a seizure. So in me being behind JW, I just turned him gently and just kind of leaned him on my arm just to monitor and to see what dad was seeing, because I was facing the back of JW. So I didn't hold him or restrict his head in any way. It was just more of an assessment, like laying him down on
in between my legs and just kind of laying on my arm. Because in the moment working with him, there was no signs of a drop seizure happening, obviously, or sensation through his body or any jerking forward in that case, in that moment, as he was sitting in front of me. So whatever Dad saw, I saw his facial expression kind of change, so of concern. And that's when I moved to more of assessing JW in that moment. But I never restricted his head at any point in time during that time.
So talk a little bit more about, you didn't think that he was showing any signs of having a seizure in that moment. Tell me about what does it look like before a child has a drop seizure?
So a drop seizure, the basic thing with a drop seizure is, you lose all muscle strength in that moment, right? You could become very flaccid. So in knowing that part about JW, I didn't assess that in the moment as he was sitting like right in front of me and we were just doing trunk support work. His face wasn't directly to me. So just in monitoring Dad's face, because he was facing Dad, like literally 2 feet away from me, I just kind of turned him to make an assessment of, okay, is he having a seizure? Because I don't think he had a seizure at that point in time. Dad's face was just concerned, like, okay, a seizure's about to start. Hadn't occurred at that point.
And did Dad say that? I think a seizure's about to start.
No. No, he didn't. He said, I think he's going to have a seizure. And okay. that's what led to the assessment. But he hadn't had one yet. He didn't initially have, like, visibly a drop seizure until Dad pulled him out of my arms and sat him right back up in the very same position that I had him. But at this point, JW was facing me and Dad had one hand behind his back, holding his back.
And was it at that point that you were telling Dad to hold his head up and support him under the chin?
Not necessarily hold his head up. It was more like, it was really just like a chin tap to say, Dad, you know, can we educate and encourage you to just like, well, not have him, you know, sitting up, leaning. Obviously, he's going to jerk forward with the seizure. But to, okay, let's protect airway control and maybe just let him lay on the ground or lean him back, you know, in that kind of way. It wasn't to tell Dad, like, okay, restrict him. Obviously, and we know we're not supposed to restrict a patient having a seizure at all in any way. I never embraced his head, held his head for any amount of time.
I guess I'm just having a hard time understanding your thought process in directing Dad on how to do things with JW when he's had seizures pretty much his whole life. He has 20 plus a day. The family sure is very understanding on how to best protect him. I'm just having a hard time understanding.
I think Dad, as I was trying to like tell him how to handle his son, but it was more so like, let's just make sure we have airway clearance. And that part safe, because the positioning, the two drop seizures that I did witness in that moment, JW's head like kind of flung forward to his knees a little bit, and it just looked very unsafe. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe if he's, you know, leaning back a little bit or just let him lay on the ground, but not having him, you know, I was trying to encourage like not just having him and sitting and letting his head fling forward to the floor for head injury. So my concern and my thought process was more safety for JW. And I guess maybe my delivery to Dad on how in that moment, Dad didn't take it in a positive way.
Okay. And so was it at that point that you put your hand on his chin?
Yeah, I just did like a little tap to say, hey, you know, can we, you know, because it was very tense. That is very, you know, it was a very tense situation at that time. And when I think back on it now, the the quick movement of JW from my arms when I was initially trying to assess him could have brought on that seizure because he hadn't had one initially in my arm, just leaning back. And it was, I wasn't holding him. He just was laying backwards, kind of resting on my arm for assessments. So I don't know if that brought on the seizure at that time or what, you know, in terms of the movement. So I guess, I don't know.
Okay. I'm not familiar with different positions bringing on seizures, but.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Ms. Gilbert, so this experience, it's been a while since this experience happened. Can you kind of talk to the board a little bit about what you think this experience taught you and what steps you've taken to learn from this experience?
So the main experience I think I learned from this is, you know, making sure there's proper documentation. So I was very new to CJPS and their system, their EMR, and their documentation, just trying to navigate through their system. I definitely think I am definitely practicing more of researching and making sure I get proper training in terms of the software to find certain documentation and research things prior to patient visits. That is definitely one thing. I really wanted to calm the situation with JW and his parents in that moment. However, prior to going into the clinic, you know, there was a very intense exchange prior, and I think I may have been a little bit nervous initially going into the home, already being late to the appointment. And I really feel like I wanted to de-escalate the situation to a point that it didn't have to get to this point. What could I have done differently? I'm not sure. I really feel it's the Rays have had an extensive time with a lot of professionals. There had been quite a number of PTs in the home that have been thrown out on record. Just healthcare professionals in general. I don't know. Maybe I could have been. I really don't know. I really don't know. I'm sorry.
Tell me about what additional research you're doing to try to be kind of clinically prepared for treatment now since this experience.
Well, now I'm definitely, I'm doing a lot of, I'm taking some more MedBridge courses right now. I'm about to go into some more training on just ethics. At the moment, but that's coming in a few months. I'm trying to sign up for some courses there. And just dealing with just patient care or when clinicians might find themselves in situations with patient care that might become aggressive or, you know, how do we deal with that personally?
Nikita, are you still treating pediatrics?
No, I'm not treating pediatrics at this time. I've left CJPS.
Do you have any plans that you know of to work in the field of pediatrics?
At this point, to be honest, this experience was a lot. So I don't think I'm going to go back into it because it just was, I'm sorry, I'm just really emotional because I've never hurt a child.
Yes.
I've never abused a child. I would never want to abuse a child. And to be accused of that is, it's just, it's pretty tough. And like, I'm really sorry. So you just give me a minute.
Of course.
Yeah, I would never, I'm very unsure whether I want to go back into pediatrics. I am very good with my manual skills as a clinician. And I think I'm going to just stay adults for right now until I just get, I think that's where I'm gonna stay.
Okay.
For right now.
Members of the board, if you don't have any questions right now, then for Makita, do you have any questions for JW's father, Mr. Bay?
I don't have any questions, but I see that his hand is raised. I don't know if we want to give him the opportunity to ask his question or statement.
Mr. Ray, if you have a question to the board, that would be great. Just not necessarily asking questions of Makita. So do you have a question for the board? For the board?
I don't have any direct questions. I do feel the need to make, a statement on our side of events, if that's okay.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's absolutely part of the process. The first thing we do at the board is we speak to the licensee. And then we speak to the complainant and ask your perspective, your statements. We get to ask you questions and try to get clarity on the investigative report before we make any findings. And so we wanted to finish with Dr. Gilbert, and now it sounds like that we're ready to ask you some questions or hear from you.
Okay. Basically, I just wanted to kind of go over the events because I just feel like a couple things got left out that we were covering. Initial seizure happened. She definitely had control of both of his arms. That's where my concern came from, was because his arms were being restricted. I really wasn't concerned about where his head was at that moment. She just kept a hold of his arms. And after he had a seizure, she had, you know, the arms were held and he went forward with his head. And that's where my concern came from. It looked very painful. Now, again, sometimes Jax's seizures can just be one drop, sometimes several drops. So I kind of kept an eye on it. Go back out to mommy, please. I kind of kept an eye on it to see if potentially the other one, and they did. And that's when I started telling her, to which she laid him down on his, and he continued to have the seizures with his head jolting up. And that's when I finally took him from her, because after several moments of saying, you know, hey, just leave him where he's at, keep his head safe, just leave him where he's at, she, you know, just give him a minute, I think were my exact words. Just give him a minute, just give him a minute. She just wouldn't stop actually performing therapy with him. She was still trying to do therapy. And then when I grabbed him, I think this is my biggest concern, is when he was in my arms, in my lap, I think that's a pretty clear, hey, I prefer you to not touch my child anymore. I have another 3-year-old. If anyone ever tried to take her or put her hands on her, she's typical, neurotypical. So, you know, I kind of try to compare the two. If anyone ever put her hands on her while I had her, I would never be okay with that. The lines are a little bit blurry when you're talking about physical therapy. But I feel like once I said, hey, you know, give him a minute, and I took him, I'm being pretty clear that I need her to stop her, you know, medical profession at that moment. And so that was really where my concern happened, is that that's when she, you know, kept putting her hand under his chin and on the side of his head. So there was two hand placements on his head, and I'm continually telling her to stop, and she is continually telling me how I should be doing certain things to keep him safe. And the way she describes a drop seizure is not the drop seizures my son has at all. So keep in mind, for anyone that isn't aware, this whole process that we're talking about, from her walking into my house to her leaving, is less than 10 minutes. So she's not asking any questions. We didn't go over his goals. We never discussed his IEP. We never discussed the purpose of that appointment. She was stretching him, and that was about it. She wants to speak to an aggression by me. The only aggression I could think of was I asked her 4 times to speak to her supervisor over a scheduling issue. She kept saying there was no one else to talk to but her. We were doing this through text message. Finally got on the phone with Makita, and I was like, hey, this is why I need to speak to a supervisor. She goes, oh yeah, no, you would need to speak to one. If that was intense, I'm sorry, but she was my contact at that moment for CJPS. She'd been the one reaching out, and I was just trying to get to someone else. That's all it was. I wasn't trying to be rude to her, just trying to imply that she wasn't the one to handle the situation. And in the end, she said, no, you are correct. I'm not the one to handle that situation. So that's the only thing that happened about that. There's never another PT asked to leave my home. Every PT we've had has been here until... when Jack's turned 3, we got a new PT, and then she quit the company at CJPS, and then that's when we got Makita after that. So we've never asked another PT to leave the home. There has been a lot of concern with healthcare professionals that have been in here. We won't hide from that, but I definitely advocate for my son very highly, and I expect him to have proper care, and it's not the first time that I feel he's been improperly treated, and so that this is just an avenue that I found. In the past, we've always gone to DDD. It's just something I've kind of wanted to bring up. I don't think you guys have anything to do about it, but when I spoke to DDD, we reported this whole thing to them, and they didn't even take a report on it. They just listened to me, and if it hadn't been for us reporting this to this board, for all intents and purposes, Makita would have done nothing walking in and out of my house, and that's the kind of experience that we've had when reporting issues with people who have wrongfully treated Jax. We've just been fortunate that this board exists. We found you guys and heard us out and have listened to it, because we've told this story all the way up to senior directors of DDD, and they have not done one thing to help us. Nor, if you can see on the roll call, they were all informed about these meetings. They didn't even take the time to show up. That's how little they care about it. So Jax has been treated wrongfully a lot. This is just another one of those situations. And again, like once he was in my hand, she never listened to me. She never in one moment did she ever stop touching Jack because of me. It's only when my wife came in from a separate room screaming, because she heard me ask like 6 or 7 times for her to stop, my wife came in and said, hey, you need to stop. And that's when Makita finally stopped. She stood up and said, well, you're not going to let me do my job, so I'm going to leave. And that's pretty much how everything happened there.
Mr. Ray, when Makita first contacted you to set up the appointment, was it clear to you that it was a reevaluation or reassessment of JW's current status and goals?
My understanding, she was simply coming and picking up where the previous PT left off. It was never discussed with me that a new evaluation was taking place. We were just because the company never reached out. It was strictly Makita reaching out saying, hey, I can come at this time. And we said, okay. And she came, and that's about the doc or the information we had.
And do you recall how long it had been, between receiving physical therapy services before Makita? Like, when was the last one before this session with Makita?
It was August. I want to say second week of August. I can't say for sure on that. And on that note, just to throw it out there, Makita is the last in-home therapist that we've had. We haven't had therapy since that day. This has led to us not having therapy. And actually, CJPS, because of the situation, won't even provide physical therapy for my son. They did everything they could. They just stopped providing therapy. And DDD did nothing to do about that, to the point we had to finally seek alternative therapy, which we're on a waiting list for.
Okay. On your first session with Makita, when she first got there, did she ask you any questions about JW's seizures at all?
We did not discuss his seizures in any way. She kind of just jumped in and was kind of hands-on. Like she said, she did show up late, about 15 minutes. So she got there. It was kind of a hustle and get to it. I think she realized that she was under a time crunch. She'd already told us met several times that we were out of her zone, that she usually doesn't drive to our side of town, and that she didn't think this would work long term. So when she got there, she certainly seemed very rushed. I'm very, you know, kind of like, okay, I'm late and I have other places to be. But so there was no discussion of his seizures or really his plan in any sort of way.
One other question, Mr. Ray. So typically when your son has a seizure, talk us through, what does that look like? How do you know when he's about to have one? What do you see? What does it look like when he's having one of his seizures?
So Jax's seizures are just, they're ever-changing. They're something, they're pretty consistent with the drop seizures and being 15 to 20 times a day, but they can change. But I would say in that moment, Jax kind of freezes. He kind of, like, say you got a hold of his arms and you're doing physical therapy and you're trying to get him to balance. He's going to go into this crouch position where his head his chin goes to his chest, and he kind of crunches his shoulders close together, and he kind of gets in this tight little ball position. And you can kind of tell, like, okay, like your attitude just changed suddenly. What will then tend to happen is he has one of those seizures. If you're seeing his face, it is much easier to see because his eyes shoot wide open. But his shoulders and his head jackknife to his where his knees are, and so it's a pretty aggressive flinch. And it kind of, it looked like a jackknife. And so he'll do that, and he'll jackknife down one time, and he'll pop right back up sometimes. Sometimes he can get stuck, and he will have a tonic-clonic. Sometimes he'll just bounce right back up. Like I said earlier, maybe that's going to be the only drop he has. Maybe those drops will continue for 5 to 10 minutes in 20-second clusters, maybe 30-second clusters. It can really depend on... I wish I could tell you what it depended on. We don't really know, but a lot of factors change it, and he has them constantly. But we do know that once he starts having those clusters, that when those violent drops happen, he will fall and he can hit his head. So what we like to do is get behind him, just wrap one arm around his torso. So that way we're not restricting his upper body movement. We're just making it so if for some reason he were to go left or right, he's not going to fall and hit his head. He continues to breathe through it. If he happens to have one in his high chair, he can eat through the drop. So have his drop, get up, have a drop, and we prefer to pull him out, but it is something he can do just to speak to his level of, it's pretty obvious he's breathing, he's not struggling to breathe in any kind of way, and it happens for about 5 to 10 minutes, mm-hmm. And then he'll either just stop or he'll get really mad and they'll be done, and that's just kind of how it goes.
Thank you. Members of the board, it's okay. I see that Ms. Gilbert has her hand up. Ms. Gilbert, would you like to make a statement or have a question for the board?
Yes. I did want to say after my visit with the Rays, the company did not didn't want any more treatments in his home, and they sent him to the clinic for treatments. I know after that visit with me, he saw the PTA that I supervise, and there was an altercation that pursued there at the clinic as well, from what I know. And also, Miss Ray was in the room during the treatment. She was just in the kitchen because it's a big open area. She never left the room. She was actually in the room the whole time during the treatment. I did discuss with Dad initially while we were sitting on the couch. I never restricted JW's arms either. I had toys just dangling in front of him. When we work on trunk support as PTs, we use toys to see if they'll reach and grab, and that's what I was working on. So I never restricted his arms, according to what Mr. Ray is saying. I just wanted to kind of address that part. Based on what he said.
Okay, thank you.
I can address what happened at the. Let me get off speaker. What happened that day of us being at therapy, there was no altercation with any physical therapist. We went. I have pictures of the room. I can send it to you. They did not have a clinic set up. That's not something that they had. They had a clinic person at their headquarters, whatever, their office. But when we went there, it was a big open room, and they had one ball. That was the only piece of equipment that Jax could use. We went one time. It was not really the best therapy in the world. I went a second time. Carly was the therapist at the time. She is the one that engaged in conversation of saying, hey, this probably isn't really the best fit. She actually brought that up with me, to which I was like, yes, I've been thinking that, to which she actually started working on. She really liked Jax. She wanted to work with Jax, and she liked me. She wanted to work with us. She actually left the room and was able to get approval to say, hey, they're actually going to let me come to your home during this time. But because an issue, the issue with Makita, when that all happened, I got there's a little salty taste in the mouth of the executives of the bill of the company. They didn't want anyone else coming to the home, even though our OT is still from CJ. Yes, she loves Jax. She gets along with Jax. So we have CJPS in the home. They just stopped wanting to do physical therapy with us simply because they knew we'd eventually just have to get physical therapy and we'd leave. But yeah, there was no altercation. Physical therapists agreed that there wasn't any reason for Jax to come sit in a big open empty room. The only altercation was with the manager. I forget her name. Monica, I think. When I told her it didn't work, that there wasn't a very good clinic, that there wasn't set up, she said, well, if you're not happy, you should just go with a different company. And if there's an altercation, that came from that.
Okay. So it sounds like that you connected with Carly and that you still have occupational therapy in the home.
We still have, Elena is our OT. She still comes from CJPS.
Okay. Board members, do you have any other questions at all for the PT or patient JW's dad?
I know.
Okay.
Mr. Ray.
Either of you want to...
Oh, sorry.
Go for it.
Mr. Ray, I'm just trying to understand. The testimony that you're giving today makes me... I guess I'm trying to understand the level of contact that Ms. Gilbert had with your son that made you feel like she was...
Yeah, so I don't think you were present for the last meeting. I don't know if you read over the testimony, but I'm happy to go over that full statement again.
So I'm well aware of the testimony earlier. What I'm trying to understand is, having reviewed that and reviewed what you said today and reviewed the transcripts, I mean, do you feel like Ms. Gilbert ever intended to hurt the child, or do you feel like it was just misguided? What's your perspective?
I think it started as misguided when she initially didn't know. This is where, if we're going to get into my opinion on what happened there, I think she didn't like me from the beginning because she didn't like the fact that I texted and said, hey, first of all, let's go to the beginning of what happened the night before when she texted me to really get the events of, I don't think she liked me very much. So we had the time set up for her to come at 10:15. We had that in the books for a couple weeks. The night before, she messages me and says, hey, we have a mandatory meeting at work. Can we go ahead and reschedule? She wanted to reschedule. She gave me two different times. One of the times we already had therapy. Another time we were going to be leaving to go for an appointment that we already had. And so I told her, unfortunately, those times don't work. You could tell through the text messages that that really frustrated her. But she said, fine, I'll make it work. And she showed up the next day. But you could tell she was frustrated with being there. You could tell that she didn't really like me very much. She's already said that several times, that she showed up feeling rather intense, when I don't think that really should have ever been the case. Because, again, I didn't have any issue with her. She got there, and everything was fine. I didn't say anything to her. She didn't say anything to me. She just got down and started working with Jax. I was like, okay, cool, She's not going to be upset about everything and try to take this out, because you could tell she'd been very upset that I questioned her in any kind of way. So at first, when she says, you know, I didn't know he was having a seizure, clearly misconception. I've been to an emergency room with Jax having a drop seizure, and the doctors didn't know that's what he was having. So fair enough for it to happen and not understand it. When she had his arms, I was very uncomfortable with that. And you can look at the record. You can see we've had 20, 30 plus people in the home caring for Jack, if not more, if you count all the nurses and doctors. There's been a lot of people that care for Jack's. This is the first time that I've ever experienced anyone who questioned what we said about how the seizure should go. First of all, anytime Jack's ever had a seizure with anyone that's never seen it, their hands go off of them because they're like, wow, I haven't seen this. This is new. And then they look to us and they look for direction and they get it. That was the first time I had to fight to be like, hey, like, and I've never taken my son out of someone's arms like that. Once I took him and she still continued to have her hands on him, and I was like, hey, please take your hands off. I mean, I said it several times, please take your hands off of him. And she wouldn't. And she kept doing it, basically saying, hey, you know, this is why you should do that. This is why you should do that. She's not taking her hands off. I'm telling her what she's doing does not make any sense. At that point, I think it's definitely a gray line between negligence and wanting to hurt him. She certainly wasn't wanting to take my direction on what would not hurt him. That's what I do know. I was telling him what would not hurt him, and she didn't care to listen to that in any kind of way. So if it's simply the case that she didn't know how to handle the situation of seizures correctly, then, you know, I don't know how to look at that, how wrong that is, but I still would put blame on her because, I mean, she told us that she had, while she's sitting there holding her head, she's telling me, I've got 10 years of experience with kids with seizures. So she's lying to me while saying that. So I think that goes on to speak to some other truths of how she was acting in that moment. I definitely think if she didn't, she was taking her frustrations of me out on my son. Whether that she intended to hurt him, there was frustrations that led to her not doing her job correctly that I truly believe if we hadn't been there would have led to more pain for my son, because you didn't see his head getting turned to the right. Like, it was, take your hand right now and hold your chin as hard as you can and try to, like, on the side, just to the side, and try to drop your head down and see how your neck feels when that happens. Now imagine not having any knowledge or control of when that drop's going to happen, and that happened 3 or 4 times while someone's telling you to stop doing that. To me, that's intentionally trying to hurt someone.
Mr. Wright, thank you for your testimony. Mr. Barton, do you have the response that you needed for your question?
I think that gives me enough information, yes.
Great, thank you. Okay, if there are no further questions, then we'll move the board into a discussion regarding the case. Are there any questions or discussion points from the board?
And I guess I'll just kind of give a little bit on where I'm going with everything. I mean, I don't necessarily see anything that would outright prove that there was substandard care in this situation. You know, maybe I'm kind of looking at the findings of fact here, the ARS 3220.44.4. I'm just not seeing anything that I would say, you know, would point that out as something that was happening. Maybe, you know, the 3220.44.12, as far as respecting the rights and dignity of individuals, you know, maybe that could be argued, but it's difficult. It's a lot of hearsay. It's, you know, or a lot of he said, she said. That's happening here, and nothing really standing out that proves one or the other. So I'm kind of struggling with that aspect of it.
Thanks, Giovanni. I think for me, having been a pediatric physical therapist for 30 plus years and working with multiple children with all kinds of levels of seizures and ages, you know, pediatrics is truly a partnership between the therapist and the parent. It requires a great deal of trust. And anytime I had a patient who had seizures, I spent the majority of the first part of my time with them trying to understand what they look like, what brings them on, you know, how to best support them, how do they react to it. So Makita's comment that she didn't really ask about seizures even when she first got there tells me that you know, she didn't start the session really truly assessing and understanding what she could have been dealing with this patient with seizures. So you have to separate out developmental delays, right? With a medical condition, you're always going to start with, tell me about the medical condition, and then how does that impair their ability to function? I don't see that in any of her documentation or her statement. She stated she went in, she started treating. Within a few minutes of treating, she was sitting behind him working on reaching. These are things that he didn't have a current evaluation. We don't have a plan of care. We have an ISP. We don't know what he's doing. There's not like a level set of what his developmental activities are at this point. She didn't have the ISP with her. She wasn't reviewing goals. And so this is a clear cut case of someone who's dabbled in pediatrics going into a pediatric setting and not truly being trained at the level of treating a pediatric patient. It's no different than me going into an outpatient setting and working on a spine because I took a CE in Caring Bridge, on MedBridge on spinal mobilization. I'm not a clinician that treats spine. So could I? Yes. Am I most likely going to do something that's not actually at the standard of care? Most likely. And so I kind of need to disagree with you there, Giovanni, in that I do think that it was a clear case of substandard care, that you have a clinician going into a patient's home, not fully understanding the medical situation, not discussing what they might look like. And then when a seizure happened, trying to manage the situation versus working with a parent who clearly knows how to manage these seizures. I mean, they're happening all day, every day in this patient's life. And so I think that, she took some liberties. I think that she made some assessments that were not accurate and that led to a very uncomfortable situation for both of them. So from my perspective, I think I would definitely side on the fact that it was some substandard care.
I appreciate your background on that, especially with you having the experience with pediatrics. And I'll come back and say kind of the same thing. I have no experience in pediatrics, let alone, managing a case that is as, complex as this one. So I appreciate your feedback on that and sure. What your view is.
It's just sometimes giving context, right, around it. Because, there are times when we as clinicians treat pediatrics as though they're just small adults. And it's a very, very specialized part of our practice. Are there any other discussions, questions, thoughts? And again, that's just my experience just sharing with you, but we have before us an investigative report that's got a few potential violations.
Kelly, this is Mark Cornwell. Do you think that could be mediated with maybe a CE course in pediatrics, maybe focused? I mean, and/or experience. She's telling you that she's probably not going to do pediatrics for the near future.
Yeah.
I have seen pediatrics. It was a 12-year-old boy with an ACL problem. Mm-hmm. So that's as talented as I get in pediatrics. So mm-hmm. I look at this and it's hard for me to separate what a clinician who's trained and experienced in pediatrics would do versus me, because I would be asking all sorts of questions of the parent, trying to figure out, mm-hmm. hoping that they didn't have a seizure while I was in the house, because I didn't know what to do with it. But mm-hmm. I'm expecting clinicians who have that kind of experience and training to have an idea. So, but I guess my question goes back is, does this rise to the level that we need to do something other than continuing education?
No, not necessarily, although I don't know that continuing education for pediatrics is the right thing. She stated she's not going into pediatrics. She doesn't want to treat necessarily pediatrics again. So it seems a little...
Does anyone know of a CE class or that on some type of patient management or patient family interaction type things, or that, because I think you're right. Having her take a course in pediatrics and go over CP and everything else, that probably is not going to get to the root problem. But is there something else that anyone knows about?
I mean, I can guarantee MedBridge probably has something related to that, you know, patient care management of some sort. That's kind of why I was more going towards the, you know, the second statute that is listed on there, and more looking at, you know, is it maybe a course in ethics, you know, related to that. But then I would agree with you, Dr. Cornwall, maybe it is something having to do with more like patient care management or family management, if they have a course that relates to something like that.
And
it sounds like today we need a course in how to manage in the home health situation. And I don't know that anybody has that, but it does seem that that's a pervasive theme. I would like to see this be a CE.
I'm with you.
I agree.
And I think, Josh, Giovanni, along your line of thought, I certainly, it's unfortunate that this situation occurred for everyone, honestly. But I do think that the, like you said, moving along the lines of ethics and knowing where you're just because a PT degree doesn't mean I can treat any patient at any, no matter what, right? So we come out as a generalist. And so knowing, you know, where to draw the line on your clinical expertise and practice, I think is a big deal. And I think that has a lot to do with ethics.
Definitely.
So maybe the CE is an ethics course.
Do you think a course in communication, client practitioner communication or something like that? I think there was some miscommunication between the two. And I feel like Ms. Gilbert was probably put in a position where she was told to go do this because they hadn't been there for a long time, and she's stressed because of a large patient load. But is there something like that would be more of a communication? Ethics, I think, may get parts of it. I don't know if it's going to get it really good.
So I'm actually, I pulled up MedBridge, and there are some courses available that deal specifically with how to talk with families about the care being delivered, listening skills, things of that nature. So, I mean, that could be some options on here. The only issue I'm seeing with it is they're not approved for CEUs in Arizona. So we would have to determine, is it more the content that we want, you know, her to get out of it, or, you know, does it really matter whether they're worth CEUs or not?
Are they approved by any other professional agency? Because if they are, that would potentially qualify.
Well, I mean, here's the way I'm thinking, is that we typically don't let them count that towards their license renewal anyway. So
right.
If it has the content that we're looking for, I'd say go.
And it looks like they're very short courses too. I mean, we're talking like 12 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes kind of stuff. I'm not seeing anything as far as any organizations that have them approved. So it's a very good chance that maybe they're not approved by other states either.
Is there enough topics that we could string several together that would amount to, say, 1 or 2 hours, and then have a 1 or 2 hour course in ethics?
Yeah, so they have essential tools for talking with family caregivers, deep listening, reflexive skills for working with families, optimizing communication to reduce family grief, which I don't know if that one would apply to the situation. We'd probably have to look at the content of it. Strategies for navigating conflict with family, care plans, helping family understand decline. And that's more related to decline in a patient. So I don't know how much that would relate to this. So just from what I can see on here, there's maybe 3 courses that would apply potentially to this case. And it looks like they're all about 12 minutes long.
Okay.
So probably want to look at something else if there are some other options out there. There could be other options out there that are better than what MedBridge has in here. You know, these are just some ideas.
I still think that we have 2 issues. We have the communication issue, but we also have an issue of a therapist treating in a space that they don't have enough experience or education in.
Yeah.
I mean, you would not want me working in a spine clinic, although I could go get a job tomorrow across the street as Arizona Sport and Spine because I'm a PT, but you don't want me in there. And I need to know that I can't be in there because I'm not trained to be in that setting. Does that make sense? And I think that is the second piece of this.
Well, do you think the ethics would get to that?
I don't know what would, honestly. I think potentially, because ethics is protecting the public. And protecting the public means I'm not going to go in and treat a diagnosis that I'm not trained to treat.
Yeah, it's likely going to be a very kind of general overview. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think there's anything specific. But what I'm hearing is that potentially a motion for non-disciplinary action that includes CEUs.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be my thought on it.
How about I move a board order for a non-disciplinary order for continuing education? Pardon?
I think is a board order disciplinary, Mark? Oh, you're muted.
You do have the option of issuing a non-disciplinary order for continuing education.
Okay, thank you.
And in it, you would not need to find a violation of your practice act.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
So my motion would be a non-disciplinary board order for continuing education of at least 3 hours, and I'm negotiable on that, including a combination of patient-therapist communication, ethics, practice responsibility, however you want, things like that. So that she could string several courses together that are quite short, but would meet the overall minimum. And these would be approved by the board.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Cordell, I'm wondering if maybe we also add in clinical preparation. From the testimony that I've seen, it seems like maybe a lot of this could have been avoided by just kind of doing the legwork before Ms. Gilbert was actually in the home. I wonder if maybe we add an hour to that.
I think that's a great idea. So do we bump it up to 4 or should we leave it at 3?
I think the 3 would probably be fine. It looks like there's only going to be about 30 minutes of the communication stuff. So okay. I wonder if maybe 3 will be all right.
No, but I think your point's well taken. I think I think that would get to some of my concerns and what I'd like to be addressed. So.
I second your motion. Any discussion? Okay, Judy, did you get that?
I believe so. Online courses are acceptable?
Yes.
Yes.
To be completed in what time frame?
I always go with a fairly long probation, like for this case, maybe even 12 months. With early termination, just so they don't have to come back to the board because they ran out of time, you know, or something like that. But theoretically, you should be able to do this in 6 months or less. But I'm okay with 12 because we could, she could petition for early termination.
Okay. Well, it's not a probation though that we're putting in place.
No, but we would put in there that it's an order, so they have to do it within a time frame. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't, then they would come before the board again.
I just mean more along the lines of requesting it to be terminated early. That wouldn't be something that is involved.
Oh, here, that's right? True. Yeah, I see where you're going. Yeah.
So yeah, but I would agree that 12 months, so that there's no need for extensions or anything like that, I think is appropriate. But I agree with you. It probably won't take more than 6 months.
And it's clear that these do not count toward renewal CEUs for licensure. Yes. So 12 months to complete these? Okay. Any other clarification? All right.
I believe that covers it.
Okay.
Okay, so it has been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order of continuing education of at least 3 hours in a combination of patient therapist communication, ethics, practice responsibility, and clinical preparation. The courses must be pre-approved by the board, may be taken online, and must be completed within 12 months. The continuing education is not to count towards renewal requirements. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Ms. Gilbert and Mr. Ray, thank you so much for your time here with the board, and the board administration will be getting with you, Makita, on some of the details about this.
Can I speak? Can I just say something or no?
We're finished. I think we're finished with the case.
Okay.
Do you have a question about CEUs?
No, I thank you for your time. I agree with everything you guys suggested and are recommending at this time. I did want to say that I did document and speak with Mr. Ray before treatment occurred, and your experience in pediatrics. I just wanted to know that you know that I did have a conversation with him just about Jax's overall condition, what their goals were and what their treatment were. That a conversation was had, and I did also put it in the documentation. I just said we had various conversations, and all of those things came up in that conversation. So
thank you.
But I do thank you for the recommendation, and I will do it, and I wish the Rays all the best.
Yes, and we wish you all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Does anybody need a break?
We do need to stop the recording, and we need to decide the course of the rest of the meeting.
The rest of the day?
Yeah. Mr. Hosterman has requested a 15-minute heads up. Okay. If we're going to proceed, the question I pose before you is looking at the rest of the agenda. Do we proceed with that? Do I initiate a conversation to potentially reschedule? What are your thoughts?
I think there's still a fair amount to cover. My inclination would be to maybe reschedule this to our June meeting.
Are you talking about the presentation from Mr. Hosterman, or are you talking about the other items on the agenda for initial review?
Okay. The presentation, I mean, he has definitely put in a fair amount of effort on our behalf to answer our questions and whatnot. I would like to potentially leave it up to him to determine if he's got scheduling capabilities to reschedule us. So I'll check with him if we take a few minute break. I'll check with him and find out what he how he's feeling.
It's great. Thank you. All right.
I just hate to have him waiting all day.
Exactly.
I know.
Exactly.
I'm with you.
So I'll pose the question and find out what he what his preference is, because technically speaking, if we were on schedule, he would be just about wrapping up right about now. So.
And Judy, Dr. King, members of the board, I'm just wondering, does anybody, are we going to have quorum issues as we head into the afternoon? And are there certain agenda items we should address in order, you know, before we may lose quorum? Or is everybody good to go?
I need to be done by one.
Karen, what was it you said?
I need to be done at one.
Okay, hard stop at one. Giovanni?
I have a hard stop at two.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Barton?
I've got the day blocked, so you have me as long as you need me.
Me too. But we'll lose quorum with Giovanni and Karen.
Mr. Greer is still in court. He also emailed that he's still in court, so we don't know whether he'll join us or not to bump our numbers back up.
Let's see what we can get done in 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. We do need to stop the recording though and restart. So.
Yeah, I hope we can
how
do
long
like
Mr. Presentation a was? Quick.
His presentation is going to be anywhere from 90 to 120 minutes.
Oh wow.
Ooh. Ouch. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His first one was 90 minutes, and based on the questions that we posed, he said it would take more time.
Wow.
And you know, I do know that Mr. Greer had a particular interest in that topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want him to miss it.
That would be one benefit of moving that, is that he might be able to participate in the presentation.
Yeah, when you call him, see if he's okay to put it on to another month and give him our sincere apologies.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that there's some items that we can get completed. I really do. In section 9 of the agenda.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Before we lose quorum. And then some may need to be rescheduled.
We do have four items, C, D, and E, and Ann McClellan. She is on the line. She said her hard stop is 1:15, and she's not available at the June meeting. And then I understand, I believe that for item B under number 9, initial review, that Mr. Williams, the complainant JB, and Mr. Bittinger are all on the line.
Okay. So am I hearing that we'll stop until 12:15, and I'll contact Mr. Hosterman and see if we can reschedule, and then we re-meet and we move on to number 9. Is that, am I hearing correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. The recording will stop at 12:11, and we will be back at 12:15.